follow. Cause this grace gets so far and too hard to swallow. I've been running from Saul, he's been given I look in his eyes, all I see is my back after all these years, chasing me out of hell and my nice fun years. I don't know how you stand when you've got
singer-songwriter William Fitzsimmons from his song called Passion Play from his 2005 album called When We Were Ghosts, or When We First Were Ghosts, and I think I just got that title mixed up. But it was one of the songs that has showed up in the ABC medical drama Grey's Anatomy. There was another one called Please Don't Go, and then there's been a number of other ones, Until When We Are Ghosts, that's what it's called, sorry. And his songs have showed up on television a number of times, including the Grey's Anatomy spinoff called Private Practice, MTV's Life of Ryan. Network's Burn Notice, it's been, his music has showed up here and there. And those initial albums were all home produced. He has a new one out called Gold in the Shadow, or newer anyway. And he's going to be appearing tonight in Bloomington and Saturday of 2 weekends from now on October the 6th in Springfield. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and William Fitzsimmons will be my guest this hour. Stay tuned. We have support for our show today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday, it's a tasting of wines from Italy, followed from 7 to 9 by the music of Samba Soul. Details are available on the Corkscrew's Corkscrew's Facebook page. And here is something, actually the opening cut from William Fitzsimmons' new record, Gold in the Shadow. That song is called The Tide Pulls from the Moon. It comes from the most recent CD by singer-songwriter William Fitzsimmons, the album called Gold in the Shadow. And William describes himself, or somebody described him in his biographic material, as equal parts songwriter and psychotherapist, and has been doing albums, did his first one in 2005, I guess. This is his third full-length album. He lives in our area, in Jacksonville to be specific. He's going to be performing in our area twice in the next week or so, including tonight at 7:30 at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. And then next Saturday, October 6th, he'll be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois, Springfield. In both cases, doing a sort of what's described as a cafe or studio setting. He'll be bringing a couple of instrumentalists with him. And it's my pleasure to welcome William Fitzsimmons to Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kevin.
The texts of your songs are exceedingly interesting, even if you know absolutely nothing about the background. And, of course, I had the chance to read a little bit about your background, so they become even more interesting. I always am intrigued when talking with singer-songwriters to know how much of themselves they put into songs. Often they will say, They will tell me there's not much, or they'll tell me there's a lot, but they won't tell me what it is. And you're a lot more sort of bald-faced about it in saying that these songs are directly out of your experience in as a psychotherapist yourself, as somebody who has had psychological issues, as somebody who has grown up in a very interesting background. This particular song sounds to me anyway like it's making some pretty, could be making some direct comment on your parentage, so I might as well ask you that up front. The experience of being raised by two blind parents has to be pretty unusual.
That's maybe the right word for it.
I don't know how to say it other than that, because I can't imagine it. Yeah. I can't imagine.
No, I think that's probably about right. And it's, you know, it's funny because when I grew up, I mean, it's very relative. You know, I grew up not thinking it was unusual because it was normal. You know, mommy and daddy can't see anything. We don't really have the lights on very much, and there's no pictures on the walls, all those things. But, you know, it's not until you get older and you start going to friends' house or, you know, going to school, things like that, where you start to see that, you know, the way that you're living is actually kind of divergent from everyone else. I loved it. I mean, there was plenty of obstacles and there were issues. You know, it was a little, I'd say the hardest thing was feeling kind of singled out, you know, because at some point you do get the feeling that, you know, maybe the people in the neighborhood look at your family a little bit differently, and never hostile or anything, but, you know, there was a feeling of otherness, I guess, a lot of the time. But there were really wonderful benefits too. You know, I credit my parents for giving me skill and enjoyment in music and things like that. And you know, that's become one of the most important things in my life. So it's like any other family. You know, there's plenty of difficulty and plenty of joy, and you know, we just had a little bit different way of going about it.
You make some reference in your first two albums to having some kind of response to not only the unorthodox upbringing in that sense, but also make reference to what you call your family's disintegration during your youth. And I wondered what happened, and how does it show up in this song that we just heard?
Yeah. Well, to answer the second question, yes. And it's funny. Whenever I write, I very, very much have to specifically try to move away from family of origin kind of material, because I personally and professionally, I feel like I've kind of already dealt with a lot of that stuff. And, you know, there's always traces of those issues, you know, but I like to think that I've moved beyond them. To the former question, I guess it's not that unusual of a story for a lot of people my age and you know, a generation or two above and below have gone through, with just being a child of divorce and you know, having to figure out what that means at kind of a strange young point in your life. Any cliche thing you can think of, being a latchkey kid or not seeing your dad very much and all that stuff. It's something that it's pretty accepted now. It's common, and I'm certainly not one to judge. I myself have been divorced, so you know, far be it for me to think that I'm above anyone. But I guess it was just a point where I was writing that I wanted to see if I could put a lot of that stuff together and move beyond it, because it kept coming up, and there's an old theory about unfinished business that, you know, until you actually deal with something, it's going to keep rearing its head. And I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be 70 and still crying about my mommy and my daddy not, you know, not loving me.
I made reference to conversation with other singer-songwriters who are more, sometimes more and sometimes a whole lot less forthcoming about what their songs are really about. And I wonder, really, though, whether you're so unusual in being very autobiographical in your songs, you're just admitting it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's probably, I could, because I'm comfortable admitting it, because the world that I came from is about disclosure and it's about forthrightness. You know, if you want to be a therapist, you need to be able to have a blank slate. You know, you need to walk in there with a clear mind and not be encumbered by all your own crap, you know, so that you can take on someone else's. So I would say that you're probably completely correct. You know, I might be willing to own up to it a little bit more, but you know, I think most writers, they tend to write what they know, and what they know is what they've been through.
There's a song on your album, Gold in the Shadow, that strikes me as at least musically, and maybe in the text as well, a little more, I want to say positive. Some of them sound, you know, are on the dark side.
Sure.
But I also understand that this one is more looking forward than maybe the previous two, which I have not heard. And the song I'm thinking of is called Blood and Bones.
Mm-hmm.
The guitar setup is a little brighter than some mm-hmm. of the other ones. And I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about the background before we hear this one.
Yeah, that was actually my, I specifically set out, I usually don't act this directed when I'm writing. I think writing is a little bit better when it's not, you know, too forced. Sometimes you have to kick it in the butt a little bit. But that was my first attempt to write a honest to goodness love song. And I had written so many up to that point that were about the breakdown of relationships and that old chestnut. And I don't know, I just wanted to write an unabashed sort of ode to, you know, to caring about someone.
What, was it a reference to someone in particular?
I mean, the funny, it's going to sound really strange. It's going to sound really strange, actually. But I thought about my mother when I wrote my first love songs. And I know that plays extremely creepy, but it's not
especially
meant to
from
be
a psychotherapist or former psychotherapist.
Well, it's just a classic Electra complex that you're dealing with. You know, no, I mean, you know, my mother is a very special person to me, and of course I love her. And you know, they're not necessarily, when I think of those songs, they're not romantic. They're about loyalty and about, you know, commitment and devotion. And those, it's funny. It took me, and I'll be very, you know, very honest here, I am in the music, you know, it took me being divorced for me to realize that romance was, in a lot of ways, a very small part of what love really is. And I think the bigger part, the part that a lot of us forget sometimes maybe, is precisely that, is that idea of devotion and loyalty and steadfastness. So, you know, that was perfected by my mom, so I was sort of just looking at her and trying to see what capacity she had for that, and what that would look like.
The song is called Blood and Bones. It's by William Fitzsimmons from his album called Gold in the Shadow. He's going to be performing at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts in Bloomington, or are they in Normal now? I've forgotten. But in any event, it's tonight at 7:30. And on Saturday, then, on October the 6th, he'll be at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois, Springfield. William Fitzsimmons, my guest on Live and Local.
Are you falling towards the evening? From the last light that you saw, from the corner of the curtain, perching on the wall. And I kept the words you gave me, godly song I try to sing. I was ruined when I saw you to every living thing. In my blood and in my bones. In my blood and in my bones. You have burrowed to the mortar. I have nothing left to hide. You're the seed that's softly sowing ever to my side. In my blood and in my bones. In my blood. Blood and in my bone.
The song is called Blood and Bones by William Fitzsimmons, heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He'll be performing in Bloomington tonight at 7:30, in Springfield on October 6th at 8 o'clock, my guest here on Live and Local. You have, we referred to some facts about your biography that we haven't actually elucidated very much. One of them is that you have been a therapist, somebody working in the mental health field, as you describe it, with working with severely mentally ill patients. I don't know the setting. I'm gathering that you've left that field?
Yes. Yes, there was a brief point of time where I was kind of straddling the fence, but it's not the kind of work I was doing didn't really lend itself well to a part-time thing. You know, when you have an individual client load, you can't really take off on tour for a month or two. You have to have more availability. So I had to make the decision several years ago which one I wanted to do. And good friend gave me the advice that said you should try to do one of them greatly instead of trying to do both, in a mediocre manner. So I sort of chased music as I thought that was maybe the way I was supposed to go at the moment.
This has to be the first and might end up being the only album ever done based somewhat on the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
That would be a shame if it was. But maybe it will be.
If it was the only one?
Yeah, that'd be a shame.
And so, you know, we can see where some of this comes from. You've worked in the field, but you also make reference to, quote, your own longstanding psychological maladies. And so I wonder if this is, you know, the DSM-3 or 4, sorry, I'm in old times here, DSM-4 is making reference, obviously, to both settings. So two questions.
Sure.
Around that, there's probably others as well, but were you a good therapist, do you think? And, you know, how did you feel about yourself as a therapist? And also then, you know, what sort of things have you had to deal with yourself? Because, you know, I've often observed that people working in the mental health field seem to have and often acknowledge their own mental health disturbances.
Exactly. And I was going to say that. I'm glad you said that. And that, you know, that can be a chicken or the egg kind of situation, of course, too, where it could just be people that are in the field tend to be more aware, of those processes that are going on. I sort of take the viewpoint that everybody's got a little bit of something, some of us more than others. But, that's the nature of illness. You know, it's a continuum. It's not a discrete variable. You know, those those little things that you sort of have to do inside your head, or you know, I mean, those are little neurotransmitter functions that are sort of on the way to OCD. They probably will never get there with most people, but in any case, I think everyone has just a little bit of little bits of issues if they don't have more. To answer your question, I think I would make a better therapist now than I was. I think I was a good therapist, but I also think I was I was a little bit naive and maybe hadn't dealt with myself as well as I thought I did. And that's maybe the most important thing, is when you walk into a room with a client, is having your own head and your heart clear. You know, it's a bit like trying to save someone from drowning if you're in the ocean too without a life vest. And that's not to be too dramatic, but that's sort of what I was doing. I was young and I was in a failing marriage and just had a lot of other things that I hadn't really dealt with. So I think now, after having dealt with a lot of those things, after having gone to therapy myself and, spent time healing, I think I could probably do it now, which is what I love, but I don't do it anymore.
I've heard that at least in some areas of therapeutic training, whether it's, I don't know if it's if you're going for, a master's in social work or if you're going for a PhD psychologist or MD psychiatrist, that at least some people in the course of their training are required to undergo therapy themselves. Is that true? And was that true for you?
It depends. It depends on the, like you said, the track and the degree one is seeking and so forth. For what I was doing, which was a master's in mental health counseling, we were involved in what you call a supervisory process, which is essentially a form of therapy for the therapist, basically. It's not quite as formal or as, explicitly, like, you are a patient right now in therapy. But, we had to do that to some degree, and I'd say it's completely necessary. Because, when you have someone, usually the people that want to help other sick people are themselves sick, right, to some degree. You know, the best place to hide a tree is in the forest. You have very, very wonderfully motivated and kind-hearted people that want to help others, but when they're sitting in that chair for the first time, they're trying to figure themselves out, and that's no place to help someone. I mean, that just leads to trouble most of the time. So, I'm not saying that the training is inadequate, but I think it would be nice if therapy was a much more regular part of life. You know, it still has a huge stigma and I don't know. I guess people just don't want to be bothered with these things. You know, there's just two types of people. There's people that like this side of life. They like introspection. They don't mind sad, mopey music. And there's people that say that's all pointless. You know, it's a waste of time. Why are you thinking about the past? Why are you not just living today? It's tough. It's tough to convince people that there's value in examining the past and digging a little bit deeper than you might want to go.
Would you call your music sad, mopey music?
Oh yeah, that's being generous. You say, but it doesn't have that effect. You know, it's, the music can be painfully depressing. I think. I mean, this was early on. I think whenever. Sam Beam of Iron and Wine had just done his second record, which was his first studio record, and a friend of mine was speaking with him, and he asked him what he thought of my music, and he said something like, "Oh, it's good. It's just kind of sad," which I thought, coming from at the time, the kind of music Sam was making, I thought that was kind of funny. But I think when someone is open to real emotional experience, this music can be cathartic and therapeutic. And it's not for everybody. Some people will hate this music, and that's totally cool. Because if I wasn't in the right place to hear this kind of stuff, I wouldn't want to go near it. You know, I would burn these CDs. But for a given segment of people that my music comes in contact with, I think this is exactly what they need to hear. And I think it does help. Unless all these people have been lying to me, you know, it's, right. I like to think that it's done some good. I don't want to be braggadocious about it, but it's the truth. I've seen it do really neat things in people, and I've seen it do the same kind of things that other music that's special to me has done for me.
I want to play another song from the album. It's called Golden Shadow. Golden the Shadow. We'll hear that song, by the way, a little later. But let me see, which one was I thinking of? Tied to Me, it's called. You have a couple of... there's a bonus disc available, by the way. If people want to go to your website, they can find the album and then the bonus. And I actually pulled this one off the bonus because I particularly like the acoustic rendition of it. Well, let's hear it first, and then I have a couple questions for you after, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's William Fitzsimmons from his album Golden the Shadow, Tied to Me, the name of the song. And he's going to be in Bloomington tonight for a concert at 7:30, more details later, and then on October the 6th in Springfield for a concert at 8 o'clock. And you're listening to Live and Local. The song is called Tied to Me by William Fitzsimmons. And William, my guest here on Live and Local. Since we've been talking about therapy, of course, for most of this conversation so far, I've been through plenty myself. And when I lived in Chicago, now a long time ago, I spent 5 years working with a therapist who had a Jungian background. And we spent a lot of time talking about dreams. And at least she said one way of interpreting dreams or looking at dreams is that everybody who is in your dream at some level or another is you. You know, it might be your mother, it might be some other person, it might be your cat. I don't know if cats counted, but in any event, you know, a way to help interpret was look at everybody as you and how would you go from there and what meaning does that person have to you and so on. And virtually all of these songs on this album say I and you. And I'm assuming, and maybe you can help me understand this, help us understand this, that I and you are often interchangeable in these songs.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they are. Before this record, any song that I wrote was completely me. And this one is, if I can put a number on it, I'd say it's 50% me and 50% somebody else. But that 50% isn't done divided down the middle of the track list. It's sort of in the middle of each song. And that was just, that was just an exercise in trying not to be as self-focused as most writers are, and as I certainly was myself. And a lot of it too was just that I personally know a lot of the disorders that I wrote and sing about on that record, and the ones that I don't, I've worked with intimately, you know, on a one-to-one setting, sometimes for months or for years. So, you know, I guess the longer that you work in a field like psychology, and again, you know, my tenure as a musician has now overtaken the amount of time I spend as a therapist or, you know, working in a clinical setting, you tend to identify with people, even with people that on the surface you might find repugnant and disgusting, you know, but you, I don't know, what was that, the line from the Sufjan song, John Wayne Gacy Jr., in my best behavior, I am really just like him. Look beneath the floorboards for the secrets I've hid. I know exactly what he's talking about, and part of that is just having enough insight to realize that we're all very capable of any kind of disease, whether brought upon by ourselves or from outside. And, I don't know, that can be a scary place to be, but I feel really safe in that place because I feel like I can make good choices too, you know. if I'm willing to acknowledge all the crap, all the darkness, then you know, then it means there's another side of that too, and I can access that if I want to.
Well, and when you say that the songs are, you know, about half you, half somebody else, would I be also correct in guessing that at times the somebody else used to be you? It's the you you used to be as opposed to looking forward to the you you have become or hope to become.
Especially on this record, absolutely.
I have a musical question for you. You said these are largely sad songs. I forget what the other word was that you used.
Depressing or something.
Yeah. and you're the tone of voice, you know, the sound of your voice carries that feel, but you also seem to have a very nice voice, and I wonder, do you ever just sing out, either for yourself or in, you know, in a concert setting, or in order to sing out, would you have to write different songs?
I think yes. I don't think these songs would work because it would be. I'm saying a lot of the things I'm saying are very, very simplistic, and probably too emotional. You know, as far as like good writing would go, I you know, they're a little bit too in your face, I think, sometimes with the emotionality. But the reason why I think it works, at least for me, is because the delivery is so understated that it's, you know, you're kind of whispering the message a little bit. And were I to sing in a more proper, you know, chest voice, I think it would be really redundant. You know, it would be screaming at someone very, very simple, obvious things. So, yeah, I think I'd have to write different songs. And I don't know how I feel about that part of performance, at least for me. I mean, when I'm alone in my studio, do I crank up the guitar sometimes, with, you know, hit the distortion pedal? Yeah, of course. I like playing around with those emotions too. But whenever it comes to writing a song, the inspiration, the motivations I feel, they just tend to lean more towards that, I don't know, that soft, slightly slower tempo, you know, feel. That's, I don't know, maybe that's where my rhythm is, or my, you know, my emotions tend to be. But yeah, I have been woefully unable to write a rock song, and again, I don't know if the, you know, I can't, maybe in a month the motivation will hit me and I'll want to make something that's louder and that's more aggressive. But as for now, I'm just not comfortable with those feelings that you get whenever you're in that kind of place. You know what I mean? Where it's fast and it's aggressive, or it's loud, or something like that.
Well, you're remarried. You have, I understand, a 4-month-old girl.
Yeah, girl. Mm-hmm.
And so who knows what this will do for you?
I'm just going to turn into the cheesy, you know, lullaby dad guy.
I doubt that. I doubt that severely.
awful folk songs that you know, like you dance along with your 2-year-old kind of thing. No, I hope not, but who knows?
There are enough of those, right?
There's a few, yeah.
This makes you who you are. Well, you know, you make who your songs are, obviously, meaning you,
sure.
You, William Fitzsimmons, and it's been a pleasure to get to know some of the songs and to get to know you a little bit during this conversation, and hopefully some of our listeners will be sufficiently interested to go out and hear William Fitzsimmons tonight at 7:30 at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. For more information, go to artsblooming.org. Or whether you can make that one or not, there's also another opportunity coming up Saturday, October 6th, 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. For info there, go to sangamonauditorium.org. And William, I actually have not written down your website.
It's just my name. It's just williamfitzsimmons.com. Nice and easy.
Easy enough. Well, I think we'll go out with the title track from this album, which ironically is only available on the bonus CD.
You're welcome.
Yeah. It's called Gold in the Shadow. Now, this one has I and she. Who's she?
She is a ghost that, you know, I make sure to keep as buried as possible, but sometimes, you know, they're always there a little bit.
Gold in the Shadow, William Simmons, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thanks, Kevin.
She comes to me when I am in my sleep. Let the night fall, hit a heavy hurricane. Like a thief, I wait to steal her to my arms. Golden shadow, and she will remain. let the night fall in. If only here to stay. Let the night come with. If only to remain.
That's the title track from the album Gold in the Shadow by William Fitzsimmons. Oddly, that particular song is only available on the bonus CD. You have to buy the bonus version of that. There's a two CD version, and then there's the one CD version. It doesn't come on the one CD version. The bonus track has a number of acoustic versions of some of the songs that are on the main CD, and in fact, I've played some of those during the hour today. And then has that one, has a couple other songs that aren't on the other one as well. But in any event, you can find that information on William Fitzsimmons' website. He'll be at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30 and at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield on October the 6th. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible with support from Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, teaming with the Art Theater to present Man on a Wire on Sunday, September 30th at the Art Theater. For more information, visit krannertcenter.com. We also have support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, featuring in-plant area rug cleaning using the master rug cleaning method. Sweeney Brothers at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. On tomorrow's show, I will be talking with Dan Carberg, who is professor of music at Millikan University in Decatur. He is also going to be music director for the opera theater production of music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier of the French Baroque. He has set the text by the French playwright Molière called Le Malade Imaginaire. That actually opens tonight. And then there's a performance as well tomorrow in Kuiper Hall at the Perkinson Music Center on the Millikan campus in Decatur. I'll be talking with Dan on tomorrow's show. So if you don't get a chance to go tonight, but you might be able to go tomorrow, you'll be able to hear about that on tomorrow's radio program. And although we don't have a recording of that music here, I'll be covering it on tomorrow's show, and he's going to send me some of this music, which I don't currently have. I thought I'd just play a little bit of music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier, whose music I happen to like a lot. This comes from a piece of his that is not exactly an opera, but that has been called an operatic divertissement or operatic entertainment. So there are clearly voices in it. We're going to hear the overture to this one, which is called Les Plaisirs de Versailles, which means essentially the pleasures of Versailles. And looking to see if I can find the text for you before She sings it. This is sort of a mixed-up booklet that has lots of French and lots of English, trying to get to the English. Ah, and it says in this opening bit, it's an homage of sorts to music. Let all succumb to my beguiling music. Mortal gods, revere the divine harmony. And it is easy to banish from the elements my enemy, discord, and to regulate the movements of these luminous bodies whose infinite power creates the joys or disasters of life. But what makes my destiny enviable is that mine is the glory to be loved by the most celebrated of conquerors. Mortal gods, revere divine harmony. The monarch of the lily indulges in me as a glorious diversion. Let all succumb to my beguiling music. The text by Molière, the music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier, and we hear members of the ensemble called Les Arts Florissants, led by William Christie here on Live and Local. Singers from the ensemble called Les Arts Florissants and music by Marc-Antoine Charpentier. The Pleasures of Versailles, which is one of his operatic divertissements, and that's by way of preview, sort of, to part of tomorrow's Live and Local, where Millikan University School of Music is putting on another play, a musical play, French Baroque comedy opera, as they're calling it, by Charpentier. It actually opens tonight. It's called Le Malade Imaginaire, and that opens tonight, 6 o'clock in Kuiper Hall. They'll also have a show tomorrow night, and I'll be talking with Daniel Carberg, who's music director for that production, on tomorrow's Live and Local. Just a mention of a very few other events going on in our listening area tonight. It's Move Over, Mrs. Markham at the Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater. That continues in good field Thursday through Saturday, 6 o'clock start, Sunday brunch time. University of Illinois Latin Jazz Ensemble is at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. Joni Dreyer, Matt Stewart, Bob Watson, and Brad are at Clark Bar in Champaign at 6:30. Sonny Stubble are at Cowboy Monkey in Champaign tonight at 10 o'clock. And an Illinois State University faculty recital by violist Kate Lewis and cellist Adriana Ransom, the Bach Suites at Kemp Recital Hall on the ISU campus in Normal. That's tonight at 7:30. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL-FM and HD Urbana with Translator, W293 AF Danville, NPR, Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. All Things Considered is next.